Afternoon, Mr. Ashraf Patel. Just as a way of welcoming you this afternoon, you are appearing before a subcommittee of the Portfolio Committee on Communications in the National Assembly. You've been appointed in terms of the National Assembly regulations, which allow that the committee can set up a subcommittee to focus on specific matters. So this committee focuses on the appointment process of the councillors that you are nominated for. Without really a waste of time, because I also know it is also in your interest to know what is going to be said this afternoon in the House. But we'll still be qualitative in terms of time that you allocated so that the engagement continues. I take it that you understand that. So without waste of time, I will introduce the members. After I've introduced the members, because we do have CVs of all candidates, we'll just give you a brief, you to give us a brief introduction which leads you to your actual presentation, and that will all be in 10 minutes, maximum 10 minutes. And therefore would engage thereafter as members. Again, with members, it will be 5 minutes maximum, which includes the question from the members as well as your response within the 5 minutes per member. And therefore, we'll then wrap up from that point. I hope that's understood. So we do have Honorable, because of the time of the day, others thought of using the changeover for a leg stretch, but they are coming in now. We have Honorable Kubeka, we have Honorable Faku, Honorable Mlala has also come in, Honorable Majozi and Honorable Van Dam had also just gone for leg stretch. Honorable Dr. Ndozi had another engagement to look at, however we proceed with the interview. Honorable Maneli chairing. So that's the brief introduction I'm going to give. And as I said, I will then give to you now at 12:55 to do your brief introduction and then introduce the presentation within that time. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, as well as support staff that made today's presentation possible. I thank you sincerely. So to kickstart the presentation, as per my CV, which has been submitted, I've been involved in the public policy and development arena for the last 15 to 20 years. Started off as a junior lecturer at the School of Public and Development Management at this university in 1996. And assisted the National Community Radio Forum in those days with the first phase of legislation for community radio in a democratic South Africa. I subsequently spent 4 years and enjoyed that, where we developed several training courses in telecommunications policy regulation, of which many previous members of ICASA, the department, and people working in industry have benefited from. Then I've moved on to foundation, I've moved on to the CSIR, it was involved in an innovation program. I moved on to the private sector in IT. And currently I'm back in academia, full circle at UNISA, at the Institute for Global Dialogue, which is an institute based at UNISA, think tank, looking into trade, regional policy, the African Union. And my task or portfolio is called the World of Digital Economy. So the portfolio involves research and analysis on the digital economy for South and Southern Africa, with a particular focus on trade, on the fourth industrial revolution, the future of work, as well as digital data policies, online regulation, and generally the ICT for development, as you would know, how ICTs can fulfill the UN development agenda. So in broad strokes, that is me. Okay, I'll now go ahead with the presentation. Essentially, I chose presentation two, answer two. I thought the questions were well formulated, and so regulation in a complex world. My first slide, I thought I'll frame the presentation in the National Development Policy Imperatives. House members may know that we all work within the National Development Plan 2030, and the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Commission has a specific sector on ICT. So these are the broad legislation in ICT policy and regulation. We have the Presidential 4IR Commission, the SA Broadband Connect Policy, the Integrated ICT Policy Strategy, and we also now have the Africa Union within the Free Africa Trade Agreement. There's a lot of stuff on digital development and trade and e-commerce. And then we have the International Telecommunications Union. These form the broad policy framework within which our national legislations are also formulated. I thought I'll start with the NDP 2030 policy review. So in August last year, President Ramaphosa and the National Planning Commission commissioned a review of the NDP. The NDP has been in operation for 5 years, and as a policy analyst, when we unpack in detail the NDP policy review, there are some gains but many gaps. As the presentation articulates, South Africa is likely to achieve less than 3% average growth, and very worrying for all of us is by 2030 unemployment and poverty rates will be between still within 24 and 27% respectively. So this is the NDP that is telling us. How do we move forward on that? They talk about indicators, and they want to, as the NDP, fast track processes, particularly infrastructure development, that can enable the economy to grow. And hopefully our Honourable Minister of Finance will make some recommendations today in the budget speech. More specifically for our sector, there is talk of spectrum licensing and broadband, rapid broadband implementation to enable economic growth multipliers to take effect. And they also talk about a reimagined industrial policy. So I think if we put that together, we have a solid framework for our sector. So to answer the question, where South Africa is with regards to the following four components, I'm now going to go quickly into them. The first is, are we a converged regulator or a single sector regulator? It's quite clear that we're operating in a field of a converged regulation, and these are the key drivers of convergent regulation. We have a new Department of Communication and Digital Technologies that is a converged ministry responsible for the full value chain of ICTs, telecoms, and broadcasting and content. We have the integrated ICT policy document. We have the Electronic Communications Act of 2005 as amended, and that creates for a converged legal framework and regulation. And then we have the ICASA Act itself that is a product of convergence of the old IBA and SACA. So yes, the question is, we in an era of converged regulation. I thought I'll bring the slide up. The strategic outcomes of the previous ICASA 2014-2018 review was about promoting, there's several outcomes, but I thought I'll zone in on three, which is very relevant for this discussion. The promotion of competition and low data costs. And in my view, if we look at the outcomes, those outcomes have generally been weak. And we can analyze why we still have very high data prices. There's a number of bottlenecks, institutional issues, as well as regulatory issues that we have faced. And I think that's we need to address it. Under local loop unbundling, there has been some moderate outcomes, good outcomes under LLU, but moderate impact. And finally, under HDI PEE participation in the ICT sector. We have good outcomes but uneven balance, and I think these frame some of the challenges going forward. Question two, what are the dimensions of regulatory effectiveness? Now, honorable members, I use the ITU as a framework, the International Telecommunications Union, all UN member nation states. Under the GSR, which is the Global Symposium for Regulators, they have given us several indicators. And the one is to achieve those several indicators that you see on the slide. I'll just elaborate. The one is policy and regulation must be holistic. Number two, there has to be consultation and it has to be collaboration-based. I think that's an important indicator. Number three, policy and regulation must be evidence-based. As a public policy specialist, if it's not evidence-based, it cannot hold water in the policy regulatory framework. Number four, policy and regulation should be outcomes-based, very important for us within the NDP, within a system where we have a Department of Policy Monitoring and Evaluation. What are the outcomes and how can you as members measure impact? I think that's critical. I'm committed to that framework. And policy and regulation should also be incentive-based. So how do we give operators in the market, as well as consumers and innovators, incentives to innovate so we can move to the level of a South Korea or Finland that has very high innovation indices? What are the dimensions of regulatory effectiveness? Furthermore, the ITU talks about connectivity mapping, matrix for market performance, measuring regulatory maturity and collaborative regulation, impact assessment, and regulatory roadmap. These are important tools that we can unpack as we go forward. Number three, regulatory institutional structure. The Constitution, that's fundamental. It promotes, within the Constitution, talks about promoting a fairness and diversity of views, and that's the broadcasting system. So our broadcasting system has a constitutional mandate. ICASA is a Chapter 9 institution. The Promotion of Administrative Justice Act, PAJA 2000, that sets out administrative action that is lawful, reasonable, and procedurally fair. I think that's important for all institutional and regulatory frameworks. The Electronic Communications Act, you're quite familiar, that is our foundational legislation for the sector. It provides convergence and the legal framework, and it substantively gives functions to ICASA on licensing, regulation, monitoring, and evaluation. And finally, very important for regulatory structures is something called concurrent regulatory oversight and jurisdiction. So ICASA will have to act in concert with the Competition Commission and the Consumer Commission for consumer welfare. I think that's very important. To the next point, my final point is around self-regulation versus co-regulation. We're quite clear, in a free market, large institutions and corporations love self-regulation. They do not like ICASA. They do not like parliamentary committees. But we need to fight for solid and competent regulation. Otherwise, self-regulation would lead to market concentration and power. And I think we need to act in the interest of consumer welfare. And that's my perspective in economic theory. Very importantly, an example of self-regulation is the WASPA, the Wireless Application Service Provider. There's an example. They would want self-regulation. But there are challenges and opportunities in self-regulation. So there's an example. Co-regulation, a good example is how ICASA has to partner with the Competition Commission on the data market inquiry. So far they have not worked as well as they could have, but I think that's a very important case study for members to look at and how we can plug the gaps so that we reduce data prices and we kickstart the economy and enable economic growth. Finally, ICASA, as a regulator, the case study of end user and subscriber services charter amendment regulations, I can unpack a lot of that as an example of ICASA as a regulator. So these are examples of self-regulation and co-regulation. Finally, I've developed a graph on the slide that gives an example of our co-regulation model in South Africa. So the slide up there dissects the Competition Commission, ICASA, and the Consumer Commission, and it goes through the different areas of responsibilities, engagements, partnerships in this regulatory system that we have. I think it's self-explanatory, but in my view, I think there is some disconnect between these three and others, such as Sita and others, and I think there is scope for ICASA to play some sort of role under the leadership of the department and other stakeholders so that we get our digital economy going. Thank you.
Thank you. I will now allow members to engage. We start with Honorable Faku.
Thank you, Mr. Patel, for your presentation. What do you feel are the objectives of the National Integrated Growth ICT Monitoring?
Thank you for the question. The strategic objective is to ensure and enable a digital society for development for all South Africans, broad universal service and access, the role of ICT in a developmental state, and economic growth and development and market efficiency, as well as at the institutional level to create cohesion and integrated policy that is cross-cutting in all sectors of society. So ICT, both as an input, economic input into economy and industry, but also as a cross-cutting sector that can play a role in taking South Africa into a digital economy.
Okay. My last question is, after you have given us your background, now you want to become part of the ICASA Council. What are you bringing on board? What changes do you want to see? Of course, there's been some weaknesses within ICASA. What do you think you can come up with new? Thank you.
Thank you for the question. Your Honor, I can say quite clearly and boldly, I'm an independent thinker. I come from academia. I do understand ICASA is subject to a whole range of issues, shortcomings, call it regulatory capture or whatever. But I can tell you without fear or favor, I'm an independent thinker. I work as a team, and I want to bring in the socio-economic perspective, the perspective of small businesses, of innovators, of the rural economy. I think they have been left out to a large extent in the digital boom over the last few years.
How are you going to do that?
From my side, it's always the power of persuasion, teamwork, policy and regulatory changes, but working with the stakeholders, whether it's the Department of Communication, the operators, the SME sector, the ICT SME councils, the different political parties, the different consumer groups in society, the community radio forums. I think all of those civil society bodies, industry bodies can work together, and ICASA can be more visible in the public space.
My last question,
Chair.
Are you related to Minister Patel?
No, I'm not.
Okay, thank you. Mm.
Honorable Van Dam? Honorable Majozi?
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon, Mr. Patel. Can you, in your own view and in your own explanation, what you understand the difference between ICASA and FPB? And also, I'll just link my question. And also, what expertise will you bring when you are appointed as a council to have a coordinated way of non-duplication and overlaps of roles within the ICASA and other entities that are in the department? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. In my understanding, that is the Fundament Publications Board. I do understand that body has a role in content regulation, which is a very complex space in regulation of broadcasting and content, because it has lots of freedom of expression issues, and I think it's a very sensitive matter. There was a film that was banned recently, etc., based on the perception or values of people that edit or, let's say, regulate, and that is their role, which is content regulation. I think they until recently fell under another department, until recently. But ICASA is different. ICASA then regulates the operators, the broadcasters. ICASA does not regulate content. ICASA regulates issues licenses, and I think there's a fundamental difference between the two. And again, there are a whole lot of issues around online and content regulation, around freedom of expression. Many of them have constitutional implications. So this is a very sensitive space, and members and the public should be sensitized to the different roles that these regulators play. Your other question, yes, coordination is needed in the DOC. You know, I followed the DOC over many years, 20 years. They had 8 ministers, etc. And it is a complicated space. There are many SOEs, state-owned entities that they have oversight. But I think there can be much coordination, especially in broadband. So the likes of Infraco vis-a-vis Semtec vis-a-vis Telkom, why cannot there be a better system of coordination? And I think there needs to be strategy within the National Development Plan around those to make these effective. We all know SOEs are in crisis. There needs to be a new mandate or new kinds of innovation and thinking around the SOEs mandate. That would be my answer.
Follow up on my first question of the ICASA and FPD. There might be a possible merger between the two. In your view, what do you think is a good idea, or they should be kept as separate? In your own view, you give me your own view.
Your Honor, in my view, whichever wherever the FPV sits, it's important that their board and their mandate be sound within the framework of, let's say, the oversight committees, the constitution, the board, and that when they perform their tasks, that it does not encroach into different forms of regulation. Let's call it intrusive regulation. So whether it falls under ICASA or on their own, it's not particularly important, but what's important is how they are regulated and the kinds of staff that manages it. And I think a lot of training, particularly sort of legal policy training that they need to undergo in terms of regulating the internet, is a very complex space. I was at the Internet Governance Forum last November in Berlin, Germany. I had the pleasure to attend a lot of these sessions and interact with regulators from around the world. Online regulation is the fastest growing and most sensitive field in internet regulation today. So I think we, to answer that question, it won't be an issue per se within ICASA, but you need to build capabilities and training.
Thank you, Honorable Mla.
Thank you, Chair. I think I only have one question on the online regulation. What is your view about regulating this positive
You know, that is a very relevant question. At the IGF in Berlin, you know, the big debate is on big tech. So OTTs like the Facebooks or WhatsApps and Netflix in particular, they and these other online services, they piggyback on the infrastructure that national operators operate. It's a very sensitive issue, and believe you me, the EU is dealing with massive regulation around it. So the EU Commissioner, Margrethe Vestager, and all the fascinating debates on data regulation, but also the OTTs. And the big issue there, as I understood the debate, was around taxation. So does Netflix pay taxation in nation states? It's a massively interesting debate. The EU is going to tax the likes of Netflix and others, so that it may also create local industries. Interesting debate. I think we should follow it because it's a greenfield debate. But I also feel that our national operators need to adjust to this global big tech, because entertainment is the largest and fastest growing sector on smartphones and internet. And how do you strike a balance? I do appreciate our operators, all of them in South Africa, are concerned because they invest billions in the infrastructure, and then the OTTs that piggyback. So I would go for a middle of the road view. And you learn by doing. So regulation is learning. So maybe you test some ideas and you test the market and you evaluate and then you build on that. There is no hard and fast answers to that, but I think as a regulator we need to build and do much more research on OTTs.
Honorable Kubek.
Thank you, Chair.
And also let me welcome Ubabu Pake. It's a great honor also on our side to have a session with you as we are presenting how strong you are in this industry, as you are trying to explain to us. Babu Pate, I would like to ask a question to say, if I can say tomorrow morning we will be appointed here as a counselor, what are you promising this department or this industry in 100 days in order to convince and to say indeed I can bring maybe a change in this industry? I'll make a follow-up.
Thank you, Honorable Member. I like the concept of 100 days. It gives leadership a framework to promise to the stakeholders. I would say, we're all aware the number one problem in South Africa is the high data cost. Headstart. That would be my first priority. How do we fast track that? Work with the Consumer and Competition Commission so that our people, the majority of our people, pay too much for data costs. As much as 20% of poor people's expenses go into data. We must reduce it so we can get to the level of Indonesia or India or Egypt or Kenya. So it encourages savings and innovation. So that would be my first priority. Second, we need to look at, saving the SABC. We know the SABC is a public broadcaster. It has an essential role in nation building, in social cohesion. How do we get the SABC to fix up all the problems? You see, you read the City Press or Mail and Guardian and Star. Every second week there's an issue with the SABC. Governance, corporate governance, the board. That is a very complex matter. ICASA must be in the center of the debate with the department and the board and stakeholders. But they must know their roles and responsibilities. So that regulation, content regulation. We see the issue of artists. Our artists are always complaining. Copyright, royalties. Many of our famous names that you see, musicians, are suffering because of the lack of royalties in the system. They are poor. That is a dichotomy. They are popular in the public, but they are poor. How do we get these systems working? How do we get fairness and equity in the system? And then finally, a passion of mine is community radio, community media. I came into the sector as a volunteer at a local community radio station. I worked in community radio. I believe community radio is essential for democracy, for development. And I think there can be more intervention to enable and support community broadcasting. I think that is essential.
Chair, also let Ntate Patel tell me, on the side of the 4IR, as a South African country, are you convinced to say we can try to also match with other countries, or as I can see that, Mina, I would say we are still a little bit far much more behind. What is the one thing that you can do in order that on that side also we can see a progress and we can say now we are frustrating on that side of the fire?
Thank you. Honourable Member, it's very relevant in the sense that we in South Africa, we have the 4IR Commission under the President Ramaphosa and his 30-member panel. They have been working for 2 years. In my view, much more work can be done. My view is that South Africa is a middle-income power. We're not on the level of China or other countries, or US or Europe, but we have a lot of good capability. And for instance, President Ramaphosa also chaired the ILO Commission on the Future of Work. So when we look at a 4IR, it has to be in a totality. So there is a view from the World Economic Forum, fine, that is the big corporation, but there's also a view from the International Labour Organization. Now how do we create a balance? Because otherwise with a 4IR, if we do not create skills development, inclusion, innovation, SME development, it can create more inequalities in a society like South Africa that is one of the most unequal societies in the world. So digital, the middle class like you and I, and the professional and the rich, can easily enable to use digital and succeed. but the middle, the working class, the poor, the rural, will get left behind. So in my view, we have to have an inclusive YR. I'm very passionate about that.
Maybe just one question on the point you raised, broadband, all that, and the spectrum issue. The dates, I'm just looking at your independence. The dates pronounced, and if you were to be a councillor in ICASA, would you say that we'll be able to attain these dates, given where South Africa is at this point in time? And if you think so, how will we get there? Just one question.
Honourable Chair, I have been reading a lot on the spectrum debate, and I think it is fascinating. I know the operators want it. It's like giving candy to children. When you have spectrum, it's very valuable. But in my view, we need to look at the regulatory impact assessment when we release spectrum. It must be rooted within the National Development Plan. It must be rooted in the SA Broadband Connect. It must be rooted in the data market inquiries and of ICASA and Competition Commission. It cannot be a freebie. Auctions, I studied them, I looked at them, are very, very, they're filled with lots of complications. Because it's if you auction spectrum, you create artificial bubbles, and these can create massive amounts of resources flowing into a sector. It can create rent-seeking, it can create negative public policy signs. So I think we need to be cautious. It's important. I think a much more deeper conversation is needed with the industry, and there needs to be trade-offs. So yes, industry wants spectrum. Fine, I agree. We need to move forward. But what is industry giving society? Are they going to reduce data prices? Are they going to invest in rural or peri-urban areas? These are important debates. And I think one cannot see spectrum in a vacuum. I think that is why we have an integrated ICT strategy. So spectrum is not just in a silo. It's part of a broader resources that the sector needs, so that it must fill the National Development Plan mandate. We need to operate in the objectives of the NDP 2030. So I think, yes, spectrum should be released, but the time frames, maybe it's a bit, one can relook at it in partnership with the department and the sector. But in my view, we need a more public debate on spectrum.
Thanks, Mr. Patel. I think members have had an opportunity to interact with you. I'll just give you probably a minute to wind up whatever you want to say at this point in time to the committee as we close.
So I think in conclusion, again, I'm humbled to be in front of this committee. It is my second time. I hope I'm lucky this time. I'm committed, and I'm committed to serve the country without fear of favor. I'm an independent thinker, but I look at it from the National Development Plan, the constitutional imperatives, as well as where this country is. We're in a crisis moment. You hear in the budget, we need to take the country forward as one nation. Forget the politics. It's the national imperative, and I'm ready to deliver on the national mandate. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you. All administrative matters will deal with the support staff. Thanks once again for making it easy for this one stays adjourned until we meet tomorrow.
Meeting adjourned.